Can I?
Do you
want to
tape it yourself?
No. Can I put it over? Okay. Yeah. We'll make room. Okay. Another one here.
This one's not working.
Yeah, settle in. So first, thank you for the opportunity to share some thoughts. As we move along, if you have any questions, comments, thoughts, anything is not clear, please feel free to fire away. You're welcome to interrupt me. I don't mind. I've been married for some time. It's all good. I don't think I'm going to depart much from what my brilliant, lovely sister-in-law was speaking about. Who's married to an amazing human being, I believe. This is really good, by the way. This is, love it. Okay, I'm actually going to, with your permission, really just maybe eliminate a couple of the points that Janice had mentioned. And we'll start with empathy. And it, as Janice said, is that, you know, the idea about sharing someone's pain is not just the mitzvah, but let's appreciate the psychology and the spiritual component that goes into this. And that's that when a person is in pain, it's very isolating. They feel very, very alone. When you empathize with that person, you're literally building a connection, a bridge. You are sharing their pain. So you're taking them out of isolation, and whatever pain they are in is less exacerbated, it's less magnified because of that isolation. So you really are diminishing their feeling of pain. When it comes to empathy and validation, we very often do the exact wrong thing. And once again, as Mr. Ompen aptly mentioned, a lot of these ideas can be applied in our personal lives as well. Because, for example, you know, very often people say to me, you know, how can I validate or have validated him? All I'm doing is giving credence to insanity. Why would I want to give him a scum and say, yeah, you're right, when they're crazy? I should tell them that they're wrong, that way they'll know. And their response, of course, is, does it ever work? They say no, and okay, fine. So what does it mean to empathize? What does it mean to validate? So first, empathy is not sympathy. Empathy is a connection. Your pain is my pain. I'm in pain because you're in pain. That's what builds the emotional and psychological bridge. Sympathy, in contrast, is this connection. Sympathy is, wow, stinks to be you, but I'll go back to my Frosted Flakes and newspaper. As a matter of fact, I'm sorry that I had to hear about your pain because now I'm going to have a hard time shifting gears to enjoying my life. Sympathy causes us to disconnect because we really don't care. You know, if everything was equal in the world, of course I don't want you to be in pain. But empathy is, I am grateful for the opportunity to hear what is going on in your life so I can share it and help alleviate the burden. The million-dollar question, oh, did you cover how to express empathy? Okay, great. So how would we go about expressing empathy? How do you communicate to somebody that you recognize that they're in pain? Before we get to that, let me give you a relatable example. Let's say you go to return a toaster oven at Walmart. Hypothetical, but return something at the store, right? So you get to the counter, and before you even approach, the woman is just waving you off saying, no, I don't want to hear it. Don't even think about returning it. And you're like, but it doesn't work. It's broken. She's like, get out of here. You walk out. How are you feeling?
Frustrated.
Yeah, frustrated. Not too good about that. Next, you go in, as you're approaching the counter, you see the woman, she just says to you, oh, you, okay, fine, you know what, give me the toaster oven, here's your $20, I don't want you to come back for another year, returning anything, and you walk out with your 20 bucks, how are you feeling?
Demoralized.
What's that? Demoralized, yeah, not too good either. Now, try the following scenario. You need a candid shot? My wife always wants to know, she wants to know why it is, whenever I have a picture in the paper, I always have a fork in my hand. Like, you know, you go away, you say you're working hard, but you're always eating at these things. So, you go in to return something, and the woman behind the counter says, hi, greets you with a big smile. You're like, well, hi. She goes, what can I do for you? Well, you're like, well, you know, my toaster oven doesn't work. She's like, oh my gosh, that's awful. You're like, well, yeah, it's not the end of the world. She goes, oh, that's awful. Wanted to have a little bagel and cream cheese, sat down, put in the toaster oven, you take it, and you're like, well, yeah. She goes, can I give you back your money? You're like, yeah, thanks. She glances at the box and realizes it's just outside the warranty, but she says, don't worry. You see her, she makes some phone calls. She's calling this person, calling manager, calling supervisor's manager, supervisor, vice president, president's hotline, calls everyone she can. 20 minutes go by, a line is forming behind you. You're feeling, bless you, half important, half embarrassed. She comes back, schwitzing, and says, I'm so sorry. I called, I tried, and you see almost her welling up. I just can't give you back your money. If I could, I would. You walk out with your toaster oven that's still broken. How do you feel?
Validated.
Oh, yeah. Would you rather walk out with that broken toaster oven or in the either of the two scenarios? Understand, we don't argue over our right to get our way. We argue over our right to be heard, to be respected, to be validated, to be appreciated, to be recognized. And that comes from somebody knowing that we're in pain. So much so, you want to hear something fascinating? I asked this question. I spoke at an organization, great organization, it's a shame that it exists, called From Divorce. And I asked, I don't know, a couple, 200-300 people, I said, if your spouse did the following, how many of you think you'd still be married today? Just the following. All the issues, all the problems, all the headaches, all the nonsense still in place. How many of you still be married today? I'd say about equally men and women, 70% of hands shot up. And here's what I asked them if their spouse did. If when they went to him or her and had an issue, rather than simply dismissing it out of hand and saying, don't make a big deal out of it, it's nothing, it's not a problem, that's you all over again, why, blah, 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 heard you, appreciated what you had to say, gave you the time and attention, and still didn't do what you wanted. 70% of people have said they'd still be married. We don't argue over things. Can you imagine, by the way, going to your spouse and they did something that hypothetically rubbed you the wrong way? I know it's just a hypothetical for you, but okay, but yeah. And you go and, you know, it sounds more obnoxious to praise your husband when people realize he's my twin brother. Fraternal. And you say to your spouse, you know what, I'm really bothered when you did X, Y, Z. And then your spouse, with almost tears in their eyes, said, I'm so sorry, you know what, I have, whether it's childhood, whether it's a block, whether it's this, and was so distraught that you were in pain, you'd be like, okay, it's not the end of the world. What bothers us is we think people don't care enough. So understand, even if you cannot provide, which you cannot, an answer to their problems, a solution to their issues, it doesn't matter. What they want is to know that somebody knows that they're in pain. And it is very therapeutic. It is very cathartic to know that somebody understands where we're coming from. I want to share with you a fascinating study. This was done with 2,500 people who were convicted of a crime that ranged from sentences they received from either probation or 20 years to life. These were indigent people who could not afford an attorney, and they had a public defender, and they asked them all, how fair do you think the legal system is? Do you know their answer is not predicated on the sentences they received? They could have gotten 5 years, 20 years to life, probation, slap on the wrist, didn't matter. They said how fair the legal system was had to do with one thing. How much time did public defenders spend with them? If they felt heard, if they felt acknowledged, you have to appreciate just how much people crave connection. Even the healthiest amongst us, which is most of you, I've jotted down a few exceptions. You ever had the experience, you know, sometimes it comes up a lot in shul, you could probably relate, if you called for an aliyah for something, you know, the gabbai points to you, and new, and the first thing you do is, or somebody's supposed to do, and you're like, God forbid you should return their connection for them to reject you. They say, no, they're not you. You don't want me. And you're not a Kohen. Well, that's true, but no. We are so sensitive. Again, the healthiest amongst us. Take somebody who is dealing with a significant stressor. As my wise sister-in-law said, people just want to feel the love. They want to feel connected. They want to feel that somebody somewhere knows and understands. That's what empathy is. Empathy is your pain is my pain. Now, the expression of that empathy is what we call validation. I can empathize with you, but you'll never know that I know that you're in pain unless I'm able to concretize it in a meaningful way, because you can have experiences of someone really caring about you, knowing that you're in pain, but you'll never know it unless they actually validate. And validation is an extension of empathy. First, let's discuss what validation is not. It is not the latest Pinterest quote on the beauty of suffering. It is not telling somebody that, oh, it's because Hashem really loves you. No, don't worry. If he didn't love you so much, you would never have this. It is not jumping in with solutions. It's not minimizing, justifying, rationalizing, explaining. It is not telling them because they embarrass us. It is not telling them anything. Validation is the expression that I understand why you're in pain, based on your perspective, which is why, for example, you don't have to agree with someone to validate where they're coming from. In our own relationships, again, as Mr. Open aptly noted, that these are things that apply to all of our relationships. Say, for example, a small child comes to you because their little toy car got a little dent in it. Do you think he really wants to hear it's not a big deal, it's a toy car, what are you getting upset about? To him, that toy car is a real car. And by the way, when your car gets a dent, hypothetically here in Lakewood, does it really matter in the scheme of things? No. Do you want someone to tell you it's just a dent, it's just a scratch? No. You want someone to tell you, ah, oh, I can see it. You parked your car, you just bought it, in Lakewood, just leased it. And I could see it's frustrating. You know what? You're just trying to keep it neat. People bang in. They just, they're careless and they just don't pay attention. You're like, yeah. You don't want to. Do you understand me? It is fine to move into solution mode. And again, I recognize the confines of advocacy doesn't necessarily warrant it, as Denise mentioned. It is fine to move into advice mode, once again, when the relationship warrants it. But that is only effective after they understand that they know that you know that they're in pain. And let me give you a great real-life muscle to drive it home. And the best example is with kids. Child comes to you and says, I want to have this cookie. Now, as any reasonable parent would say, before dinner would be what?
Eat it.
Eat it, enjoy it. Do you have openings for adoption? Granted, it would be weird. Just enjoy it. Good. I know you really want that cookie, right? You learn about validation. Real and truly first. But I really want it.
Too bad.
I'm sorry.
I
want to live in her house. How about this? What's that? Put it next to you while you eat. But now here's the problem. Here is the problem with everything you just said. Other than the fact, you're not wrong, by the way.
And I also like to eat a cookie now.
Go to the head of the class. Until that child knows that you know just how tasty that cookie is, he doesn't want your solution. Of course he knows he can eat it after dinner. You look at that cookie, you say, wow, that really look at those, you know, I think I could eat half the box. Now he's thinking he's got a partner, you know. But tell you what, mom will never find out. You eat half, oh yeah. Now he's beginning to do a hush one, right? That looks so good. Oh, it's got those sprinkles. Man, those are the best kind. This and that. He knows you're in pain because you want it too. He knows that you know his pain, how good that cookie is. Now you can tell him, you know what? Mommy just made this delicious dinner. Why don't we go ahead, we'll take a cookie, we'll put it by the plate, we'll keep an eye on it, and then we'll enjoy it afterwards. All of everything you said, sorry, sweet, I'm sorry, it's good, but it's great, it's fine, it's what everyone does. But once he knows that you know the pain that he's in, then he's open to solutions. Pardon me?
He becomes a partner.
That's right. He becomes a partner. You become connected. That's what it means to empathize. There's a connection. There's a unity. There's a wholeness. There's octos. There is one. If you're one, then your pain is my pain. My pain is your pain. Okay. Any questions?
I have a question.
Sure.
Curious about sympathy. So, like, sympathy, you said, is disconnect.
That's right.
So, is there ever a place for sympathy?
Excellent. Yeah, yes.
In life?
Most certainly is a place for sympathy. And just to make sure everyone heard the question, that is the distinction between empathy and sympathy. So, empathy is connection. Your pain is my pain. Is there ever a place for sympathy? Sympathy allows for us to recognize that someone else is in pain without owning their pain. And it is perfectly legitimate for us to move through the world without absorbing other people's pain. And I will tell you the very reason, the very fact really that you're in this room tells me that you are somebody who feels other people's pain naturally. I will bet almost everyone here, with few exception, and that's probably just the men, can have a conversation with somebody, and the woman will say everything is fine. You'll walk away saying, oh my gosh, I don't know what she's dealing with, but I know it's big, and I could just see it. Someone else will say, what are you talking about? She was just said everything's fine. You say, no, there's a lot going. You could read it, you could feel it, and the problem is you absorb it. So that leads us nicely into our discussion on boundaries, once again, as Janice mentioned. Boundaries are necessary for every single relationship, particularly when you are working with someone in the capacity of an advocate. In the beginning of Bereshit, Hashem defines and delineates all of creation. There needs to be boundaries in order for any relationship to survive and to thrive. Do not think for a second, by allowing someone to come into your space uninvited, that you're doing anyone any favors. The problem, of course, is when a person is in pain, they will sometimes, based on the personality, breach boundaries. Because, in much the same way, let's say you ever had the experience of having a toothache, all the world's problems go out the window. You don't care about the people starving in Africa. You don't care about, you know, the issues with it. Nothing good. You've got a toothache, and you just want to be out of pain. You will call this person, you will do that. You will do things that you normally would never do in a relationship. When a person is in emotional pain, it's the same thing. And there are different personality types, and I don't think we're going to have the time to go into that. But you will find some who become much more assertive. And looking back, they would cringe at themselves. And of course, you know, this is not about judging or blaming. It's just about us taking responsibility for our boundaries, not for theirs. Which means then, if you're no good to you, you're no good to anyone else. Right? We make kiddush. If you pour out all the wine or grape juice to everyone else and you don't drink any yourself, does anyone there benefit? Is anyone, no one's yotzei, because you have to drink yourself. Moreover, you should really drink first. When you are full, then you can give. Which once again, just, and I wish I had the opportunity to hear Janice's entire talk, but as she wisely pointed out, there are going to be times when you don't feel that, you know, like your battery, it's like got that red and says 2%, and you're just looking around for an outlet. That's not the time when you want to say, you know, let's look at, you know, the latest Tony Time video, unless it's mine, then okay. You know, that's the time when you want to recharge. You can't give somebody else when your battery is running down. And once again, as she wisely noted, you're always better off starting with more, with less than with more. The reason is, a person who is in pain, and that's all of us sometime to some degree, can very easily feel rejected or dejected if somebody withdraws from us, if somebody separates from us, if somebody, it's like, you used to pick up my phone, what did I do wrong? Why are you moving away from me? What did I do that caused this? And they're going to take it personally. And it's very hard not to. You used to pick up the phone when I called. You used to answer my text in 2 seconds. So I do encourage you to, even if you're like, sometimes you're on your phone and a text comes in, still, unless it's b'kolach nefesh, and as Jesus also wisely pointed out, it really rarely is. Even if, you know, their emergency is not a genuine emergency, it doesn't mean you don't empathize. It doesn't mean you're not there for them. But you will do yourself no favors by having porous boundaries where there's no clear delineation of where and when and how you're going to step in. And certainly, I just heard a snippet about financially. Absolutely, positively not, whatever it's worth. I would take that off the so much so that I would make it a two-way street. In other words, and don't make it about you. I'm sorry, it's a policy. We cannot, you know, much the same way in politics, you can't accept a gift more than $50 without filling out a whole lot of form, and you can't give a gift unless whatever. In much the same way, they may want to show their appreciation. Great, let it be with something homemade. Let it be with something that they did. Let it be with something. If they give you anything of significance, and again, this is just my 2 cents, you'll forgive me, I would encourage you to have some sort of guidelines in place, because human nature is what it is. You're dealing with them. They just gave you a beautiful XYZ. They call you. You're in the middle of dealing with homework, dealing with supper, disarming a bomb, and their call comes in. What are you going to do? You know, which is why, you know, we know also in the Torah, right, judges, they're not allowed to accept any sort of remuneration, reciprocation, acknowledgement. Even a smile can be deemed as bribery in some cases. You have to be very, very, very careful. So it makes it a lot easier, too, when they ask you for something monetarily wise. If you don't accept their gift, you have a policy of not doing it, then it makes it much more obvious that this is not something that can happen. And it doesn't have to be begrudgingly. You could say, I wish I could. You know, truthfully, is, you know, maybe you're not in this situation. You could say, I might be able to do something if I could, but this is a policy. This is what I agree to. My hands are tied. This is not about you versus them. This is about you on the same side versus some mean organization that's run by some very nice lady. Right? And let them take it up with her. Right? Third party. It's a lot easier. You don't have to injure your relationship. And quite frankly, any sort of friction should always be sort of just segue to somebody else so you don't have to be the bad guy there. But boundaries are invariably necessary, particularly if you're somebody who is prone to you know, being very empathetic towards the plight of others. Okay. Any questions? Yes, please.
In terms of how to express validation, what would be, I mean, I'm sure there's not like one, you know, script to say, but do we want to steer away from things like, I know how you feel, because frankly, you know, hopefully we don't know how they feel. So what kind of statement would be like authentic with and still sounding validating?
Excellent, great. Let me actually do a better job of sketching that out, what it looks like to empathize and validate. When somebody is speaking to you and sharing their pain, it's easier in person, but the very best, let me give an example, by the way. Let's say you're having a conversation with, you know, a friend of yours, somebody close, whatever, and you start talking and they do this, right? Now, the room is, let's say, 40 degrees below zero, and they do this. Do you still feel a little bit put off? But yeah, we do, because subconsciously, even though we know they may have a valid reason, you don't have to pressure on the other way. I know you did that. Yeah. No, I know. Everyone's going, oh, now what I do. If I do it, he's going to say this. I don't do that. Now I'm just sort of like, I was watching. It's subconsciously, like I know in sales, actually my twin brother, my brilliant twin brother, is a master sales trainer. We often talk about nonverbal behavior. And you know, you want to put somebody at ease. When you're talking to somebody, and I do a lot of work with law enforcement and tactics of interview and lie detection. And when somebody does this, even if they're comfortable doing this, it sends the message is I'm defensive and I'm not interested. In much the same way that our posture, you have a conversation with somebody who's socially not so adept, you're talking to them at a simcha, and you're sort of like, oh, uh-huh, right, mm-hmm, yeah, mm-hmm. You can't face further away, and they still coming at you. They don't get it. So when you're empathizing, when you're talking with somebody, it is best to communicate that there is nothing more important in the world to me than you right now. That means you're not doing this, your arms are open, your nonverbal reflects their emotion. So when they're talking to you, you are expressing, genuinely so, it's not about feigning it, but if you genuinely empathize, then you're expressing, you're reflecting back, mirroring the pain that they're in with whatever expressions would be appropriate. You don't have to say anything, because you're right. Sometimes words diminish the value of a conversation. Right? Much more can be communicated by silence and by listening and acknowledging certain the affirmations on the phone saying, you know, appropriate, oh my gosh, oh, genuinely so, verbal sort of acknowledgments of what they're saying. It means not interrupting the person. It means not jumping in with a solution or... talk about boundaries and you talk about validation, it's important to offer a way to disengage from the person without them feeling like they're not important enough. Because what happens? I don't know about you, but sometimes, you know, I've talked to some people who you talk to them for 2 hours, and then after 2 hours, somehow, you know, they're driving in the car, you become their entertainment system because they're in traffic. I don't know how that happens, but, you know, it's like, hi, yeah, I'm stuck in traffic. It's like, well, okay, I'm not. But no, no, yeah. It's like, you know, very nice, but... Okay, so here's the thing. Just because somebody calls doesn't mean you have to pick up the phone. It's like, it's some sort of unwritten law that became into our culture, but no, it's my phone. I can pick it up when I want to answer it. So I'm going to answer it when I'm in this space in order to engage. In much the same way that Chazal put fences around halacha, right? The rabbi said, you know, if this is a something that is important, it's a deraisa, we have to make sure that you don't come close to transgression. So we're going to go ahead and put a fence around it. Much the same way, when you're not in a headspace, when you don't have the emotional wherewithal to give, don't put yourself out there to be slaughtered. Because when you're in a constricted space, or even guess what? If you're a human being, you may be in a bad mood. You're not going to be able to give the person, and quite frankly, it may not even be a productive conversation. You do yourself no favors by engaging when you're not in that space. Moreover, how do you know, what's the litmus test when you've engaged past the point of your abilities? Now, again, most of you, it's clear, will give past the point that you're able to. You need a kidney? Here you go. You need another one? Here you go. You need a third one? Hi, is there a gemach for him? Yeah. It is, if you give and you feel resentful toward that person, you've just crossed the line. Your giving should infuse you with a sense of simcha, a sense of joy, a sense of positivity. Once you cross the line into feeling resentful, that's when you have to take a step back. Not being selfish, being selfless. Because if you give past the point where you're capable, you've just spent yourself. You just got that battery onto zero, the phone's unplugged. You go no good to anyone else. Sure.
What if the resentment comes after, like, you give, and then something happens between you and the person, whereas, like, the person did something that...
Excellent.
So afterwards the resentment comes, does that mean that you gave too much?
The very good question is the resentment comes afterwards. Here's the thing. Chesed is given. It is not an exchange. It is not reciprocity. It is not, I give you this, you give me that. If you are expecting so much as a thank you, an acknowledgement, a karsa tov, any inkling of gratitude, consider icing on the cake. You give because it is responsible to do. An act of chesed is you choose to give. If you are going to become resentful because the person is not able to reciprocate, I will tell you, in any relationship, and certainly people dealing with stressors, I would say that you are not respectfully really giving. You are engaging in some sort of exchange where you do this because you feel good, but if they don't acknowledge it, then you don't feel good, so now you don't want to give. That's not why you gave. You give to anthropomorphize Hashem, the ultimate giver, he's the ultimate creator. We feel good too when we mirror that when we give. But if you're giving solely because it makes you feel good, it's selfish. Not that you shouldn't do it. The higher level of giving is, you know what, this is the right thing to do. As a consequence, I really feel good about myself. The fact that this person was in pain and not able to reciprocate or acknowledge, that's okay.
What about if they do something that, like, afterwards, like, if they'll, let's say they'll do something that's bad for you, just like human nature, that afterwards... Right. Is it
that? Of course. Look, first, I can tell two things. One is this happened to you.
Right? Very evident.
Yes.
And two is you have to appreciate people are unwell. Start with that premise, by the way, and then go from there. Okay, in the rest of the world, start with the premise people are unwell and then move from there. If your expectations exceed people's capacity, time again, you're going to find yourself frustrated. So... it's clearly is a little post-traumatic here, and I encourage you to work it through. You know, they may have been manipulative, they may have been conniving, right? They may have done something, and you felt sort of used in the end, like somehow this...
Used, more like used than anything else.
Right, I can see that. And as a matter of fact, you probably feel that the entire thing from beginning to end was orchestrated to get you to this point, and you were just a pawn piece, right? Okay, so I've got a great therapist. She's super empathetic. She takes Obamacare. Okay. Let me just draw a distinction of what real chesed is. Chesed is, I choose to give because it's the right thing to do. give you an example. Let's say you gave $100 to a tzedakah organization. How would you feel? Pretty good. Somebody comes along and robs you of $100. How do you feel? Not so good. Now, in both cases, $100 is going out of your pocket. One is very empowering because you chose to give. The other is very unempowering and very, to the contrary, you feel taken advantage of because you were robbed with your consent. In relationships, if you can't say no, then you can't say yes. Meaning, if you don't feel like you can stand up to the person in the situation, you may not be the best person for this engagement. Because I can't give to you, somebody comes to you walking through the neighborhood and they say, can I have your watch? Are they really asking a question?
No.
No. Then what they're really saying is, give me your watch. So if you can't say no, if somebody asks something of you and you don't feel like you have the ability to say no, guilt-free, then you really can't say yes, because it's not chesed. Chesed is I choose to give. Robbery is you're taking from me. So if you can't say no, you're not really saying yes. Yes, please.
Never mind this particular volunteer situation, but just about every Yiddish woman has so many, at this point, obligations that they're being asked to stretch to give to that they don't really have the option of saying no to. You just need to grow bigger enough to give it and give it and give it without resentment. And even, let's say, in this particular, let's say you do set up a relationship with a person you're mentoring, with boundaries and appropriate parameters, but for whatever reason, right now, it's big for you. But because of the way you set up the relationship and their need, you can't just say, no, I'm sorry, I'm not going to talk to you for the next 2 weeks. You have an obligation to be big enough to stretch, and yes, to give it at that point without resentment. And that goes for, you know, the extent of all of our giving.
Let me make sure I understood the question right, and then let me offer my thoughts, and you're welcome to agree or disagree or let me know your thinking. What you're saying is that, look, we're all, you ladies, are stretched very, very thinly, and responsibilities and obligations, even responsibilities that we don't take upon ourselves, are sort of thrust upon us, and we have to stretch ourselves, no matter how thin we become, in order to accommodate the request, because quite frankly, at the end of the day, it's the responsible thing to do. And we don't have the ability to withdraw ourselves, recuse ourselves, merely because we're dealing with our own stuff. We should be able to step up to the plate and to give. Do I understand that right?
Yes.
Okay. So, in all areas of life, we have priorities. Now, what's most interesting about this thing called priority is that the word actually, up until the 1950s, was singular. It was in the English lexicon, the word priority, for 500 years. And then we came up with this idea, actually interesting how it evolved, that it would actually become pluralized. How's my English? Became plural. It's not plural. Just Abraham Lincoln once said, how many legs would a sheep have if you called its tail a leg? Four. Calling it one doesn't make it one. So you could say, I've got this, 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 and this, and this. My definition of priority is something that takes precedence over everything else. Now, I recognize we may have a priority and other things that are also very important, but if you are not being responsible to your obligations, first and foremost, it is not responsible to take on additional burden. Here's what happens sometimes, certainly not in this case. Let me just talk to you about the rest of the world. I'm busy at home. I'm doing homework with the kids. My husband's doing this. I know it's a bad example, but work fine in San Francisco. I'm doing this, but you know what? I put a beautiful dinner on the table. Meanwhile, my kids eat the cookies before dinner. My husband never went to any talk about Lieberman. Does all this stuff, and I get a phone call to do a little bit of chesed, and I just make a little brownie. They send me a note of thanks. They follow up and say, we're so appreciated. I see the woman in the supermarket and she can't stop raving. And I feel really good because this woman just gave me what I've desperately been craving at home. And that is just an ounce of appreciation, an ounce of acknowledgement, an ounce of thank you. Again, not you, the rest of the world.
That's not
what I'm talking about. With respect, would you give me just okay, thank you. So I'm going to go ahead and now shift my attention, because it feels good when people acknowledge my efforts out there. If I take $5 from one person, I know Rob Peter paid Paul, we need a better expression in our own community, but I, you know, pay $5 from one person to give to somebody else, I'm not doing chesed, I'm robbing from one and giving to somebody else. Nobody wins here. I'm a thief, this person's been robbed, and this person gets money that was the result of a gun, of somebody stealing. So, if I choose to give, that's one thing. So when we choose to take on responsibilities, it is important for us to prioritize, and let me, just with your permission, just sketch this out more fully. If somebody comes to you and asks for a check for an organization, and you know, you have these, you know, people sometimes will come, they'll collect, and as they're talking, I say to myself, okay, fine, $18, and they keep on going, okay, fine, 36, but I don't care, no, no. And then they tell you about, it becomes worse. And like, and then I could hear, you know, my wife say, David, let me talk to them, you know? And then it says this, and I'm like, that's not passive. Also, I will reach a point. I can't go to the gemach to borrow money. So time is our commodity, meaning that, God forbid, somebody has an issue going on in their lives. They realize with all the plates they've been spinning, they could put a couple of them down, and it's not the end of the world. You have to separate out. This is nothing to do with chesed. This is our own lives, talking about what is a priority and what's not. You have to separate out wants from needs. And when we confuse, we conflate them too very often, there are not. If you are very clear on what your values are, what's important to you, and your goals stem from your values and what you want to accomplish with those objectives, you will be congruent. But if you value very much your children, spend no time with them, you value relationship with your spouse and don't talk to them, and you're doing something else, even within the house, right? I would respectfully suggest that the person is incongruent, meaning that they're going to find themselves drained. They believe XYZ is important. They spend all their time in ABC. Emotionally, spiritually, and cognitively, there's a separation, there's a disconnect there. The more congruent we are, the more energy we have. Meaning that this congruency stems from our values, what we believe is important. Everything stems from the home and the relationships. So if we are whole, we are healthy, we are taking care of ourselves emotionally, spiritually, financially, in every possible way, to whatever our capacity is, that's when we say, now I'm going to go do chesed. So when you're in a situation with somebody, to answer your question, I would respectfully suggest that we do have every right to draw a line. And when somebody comes to us, just because they have a need doesn't mean that we have an equal opportunity or an equal responsibility to meet that need. We may not be able to fulfill it. And there are people out there, and again, not you, but they're called doormats. They're called perpetual people pleasers. These are the kind of people that will give and 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 give, telling themselves maybe on one level that they're so good, on the other level, maybe it's to compensate, to make up for whatever. I don't want to assign any pathology to it. But our responsibility, first and foremost, has to be to what our values are. And if we're in a situation where we find that we're not always able to be consistent, it may make sense to move into a different capacity. If, however, it's a one-off, you're right. We can't recuse ourselves of responsibilities merely because we're busy. What we can do, by the way, is let the person know, because look, we're not going to... We're not going to be effective with this person if we do it with half a heart, half a soul, half a whatever. We're just not good. And I don't think there's anything legitimately wrong with telling the person that right now, unfortunately, the wheel of fortune has landed on you, or misfortune. You're dealing with some stressors, and you will always be there for the person. If they need you, they can call, talk, whatever it is, and then politely ask them. Again, put them in a position of power, which is very important. Would it be okay if I, and then talk about what you need, was able to cut back? You will find if you've got a right relationship with a person, they will have such empathy for you. They'll be so grateful that you share this with them. And you might just find that you've got some, you know, flowers, Erev Shabbos, you've got something, because they're now aware and paying attention to your pain. Did I in any way not answer your question, or did you disagree with anything I said?
No, this what you said at the end is you know, very, sometimes when you need to stretch too thin, you need to say, be honest and open and say, I can't do it.
Yes.
But still many times you do just need to say, don't be bigger.
Right, so again, Perkei Avos, Ethics of the Father, says, get yourself a rav, a friend, because the one thing even the wisest of men cannot achieve on their own is objectivity. I cannot gain clarity. You may find someone to tell you, are you kidding? You're doing this, and that. How could you even, you'd be thinking, oh, well, you know, hearing it that way, it does make it sound kind of insane. Or they may say, oh, come on. All they're asking for this, you're holding on to this grudge or whatever because they didn't do whatever it is, there it is. I didn't need to point to you, I'm sorry. Whatever. All right, so I don't know what to do. I do know that one of the best things you can do is speak it over with somebody who knows you, knows the situation, and they can guide you. And here's the thing. You say no guilt-free, you say yes to simcha. Whatever your response is, right? It doesn't have to be charged with negativity. If you have to say no, understand it's a responsible thing to do. You do it with empathy. You do it with as much compassion as you can muster. And here's the thing. You don't tell the person what you're doing. It's very important to understand this nuance here. You put them in a position of power. They feel weak. And now the one person that's been advocating in the corner is telling them, I'm going away. A much healthier way to do it, to disengage, is to tell this person, a little bit, if you're able to, what you're going through. Let them know you feel awful that you can't be for them in the same way. Ask for their understanding. Ask for their permission if you could just take a baby step back. You do that 99% of the time, they will be so appreciative that you respected them enough to tell them the truth, put them in a position of power, and then they can say, there's the big person, of course, don't be silly.
Doing that, and also, you know, stretching yourself to meet things that you can are both very different than being a doormat and just...
No doubt. Of course. I shouldn't stretch ourselves. We shouldn't push ourselves. But there is a point where pushing ourselves becomes hyper unproductive.
Yeah.
Okay. Yes, a lot of questions. I'm sorry. Mr. Duncan.
What do you feel about the statement that your kids should give you tons of nachas?
It's insane.
Based on what you're saying, it's totally missing the objective completely.
For sure. A friend of mine had a Down syndrome baby some time ago. And I remember him telling me, he said that, you know what, he went to his Rav, and his Rav pretty much just slapped him. He's like, oh, that's nice. And he said, your children aren't there to give you nachas. Your children are there. You know, we have a fundamental misunderstanding of our marriage and of our children. And to frame it properly makes a very big difference. Our marriage, we're there to grow. We are there to give. We are there to, as someone once said, it's like sandpaper for the neshama. We are there to make ourselves into somebody better. Start with that premise, and you'll have a different marriage. With our children, we are there, they are there for us to give to. Period. We have responsibilities and obligations to them. In order that we should do our job properly, we have to teach them that they should reciprocate, they should give, and so on. But nachas is something that is so unfortunately imbued and infused into our mentality that we end up feeling that it should be something that we're entitled to. And in the words of Rabbi Eliyahu Dessler Zatzal, who said, when expectations begins, love departs. He said this at Sheva Brachas. As soon as I begin to have expectations on you, what I demand, what I should get from you, I wrote a book called Never Get Angry Again, available at fine bookstores everywhere. And on Amazon, this is Brad and Ash Review. Never Get Angry Again. And there's an entire chapter about expectations. And you'll find that when you're able to, right? Janice has known me for maybe 20 years. Have you ever once, in the 20 years, once, ever known me to become upset, frustrated, angry, disappointed, any negative emotion?
Then we're
going to
get the whole cookie set.
Right, well, that'll be true. She said, I'm going to get the whole cookie, but sadly she's not speaking metaphorically. It's, they're like my cookies. Other than denial, I'm very healthy. Right? Someone once said, I love this quote, the only difference between somebody who writes self-help books and someone who reads them is the person who writes them writes well enough to get a book deal. Other than that, I remember I got to tell you a funny story about Robert Pliskin, but I know we're out of time, so I'll just get a couple questions, we'll wrap up. Yeah.
Yeah, I just want to give a plug for MRD, because and you know, I heard from Friday saying sometimes we'll get negative feedback from the woman that we're helping. This is what makes EMD so unique, that we're helping families and we have so much support between Zelda and Hannah Esther and the clinical advisors, like Golga and Rocco and Goldie, that even when you are getting negative feedback from the client who is not well, at least you have someone to talk to who's going to empathize and is going to help you get through it, because it could be frustrating to be dealing with people like this, and they're so, that's what makes this team so special. So it's not like we're throwing you blindly to these people who are so needy. Your hands are being held, you're being, because if you're feeling depleted or used or abused, you have to keep people to talk to, or they're just gonna give you the pat on your shoulder that you deserve and that you've earned.
Toby, I'm so happy you brought that up, because in the list, I actually left that out.
Oh, see that?
He speaks about that, that part of it is that you will get negative. Mm-hmm. And to just, you know, you have to, yeah, exactly what you said, so I'm happy you brought that up. Yeah. Part and parcel of any relationship, and especially in a relationship like this, a therapeutic relationship.
I wanted to share a great line. It's not our people, but it's not our life growth, it's fun for my children. And then it was a question that I did have about empathy. In order to empathize, I need to put myself in the other person's shoes. How is that different than taking on the other person's emotion?
Excellent.
You need to
question.
Take on the emotion to a certain degree to be able to really empathize.
Right.
But how do you, where it doesn't.
Right. So I would suggest that it's not that feeling someone else's pain. And we all know, you know, the story about the route that went to the doctor and said our wife's foot hurts. That happened to me also, by the way, because my foot hurt, my wife stepped on it. And then both of our foot hurt.
We knew that was coming.
What's it?
We knew that was coming.
And that's just it. Forgive me. I didn't cover everything I wanted to, but I blame you, not me. It's okay. And that is that. In order for me to feel your pain, to see from your perspective, that means I've got to take my ego out of the way. It can't be about me, it has to be about you. When we're locked in our own pain, I can't shift perspectives. When somebody's absorbed in their own stuff, they see through their own lens. So in order for me to put myself in your shoes, that means that I am going to feel your pain, and that's exactly what empathy is. But the ability to remind ourselves that what we're doing is giving to this person is what will charge that exchange with positivity. But the minute it drifts into we're being taken, that's when it becomes draining. So you can really feel somebody's pain and somehow leave, even though sort of, you know, as like you ladies would call it, a good cry. No man will ever say that, right? What the heck does that mean? Good cry, right? Is that you feel very sad for the person, but you also feel very positive. And that's exactly what you've accomplished by knowing you've given something. When you give, you feel good. You've shared something. You've alleviated. It was tough, but you feel good. If you're left and you're lying 3 days in bed because you can't deal with life, you've just crossed the line. You most certainly do, and somebody, you know, who is very empathetic has to be aware. But once again, reminding yourself of what you're doing, the act of giving, is so cathartic, so transformative, and don't make the mistake to think for a second what you're doing is negligible or marginal in any way, shape, or form. It is so pivotal, but at the same time, also recognize that your obligation and responsibilities is first and foremost to yourself. And in making yourself whole and healthy, that's when you're able to give as much as you possibly can. Yes?
I have another question.
As I was filling up to my big crescendo of an ending. Yes.
You're saying it's something like when a person like has their rent, sort of, when you're listening and you're going to clap and you're going to say, oh, yeah, and whatever, is it okay to ask questions and to find out more about what's going on, or just leave it as how they're saying it? And
excellent. You're going to find two types of people. You're going to find the kind of person that doesn't want to be interrupted in their monologue, right? They want to talk and get it out. They'll even repeat themselves and say the same thing time and time again. You'll ask a question and they don't even answer it. You'll find out very, very quickly what category this person is in, and also different times. They just want to talk. They don't even want to think. They just want to talk. They just, that connection, that bond, that expression is cathartic. Other people want to engage. They really want to get in to better explaining it to you so you understand it, and they have a need almost for you to understand and to own everything from beginning to end. So they'll tell you, based on their response very quickly, whether or not this is somebody who just wants a listening ear and someone who wants an active ear. And with that, I thank you very much for your active ear.